Anna Stanley. Good evening, everybody. This is WGN Girls Night Out with Hannah Stanley. It's one final girls' night out, and we will talk more about that a little bit later. Amy Guth is going to come in and join me towards the end of the program, and we can give a little bit more information. But this is the very last girls' night out. I am thrilled to be joined by Dr. John Duffy. We have so much to talk about. This is sort of the end. I know Kwanzaa, I believe, starts tomorrow, but this is the end of most of the holidays. Hanukkah has come and gone. Christmas is, of course, over, which brings us to conversations of not only New Year's resolutions, but maybe dealing with any holiday disappointment, holiday depression, holiday blah, blah, blah. We've got some interesting stuff we found on the internet with kids freaking out about not getting the right present or not getting the present they wanted. So we'll talk about that. And then, of course, a very, very, very special and I'll say robust moments of gratitude. So it's going to be where I ask for your interaction, and that would be at 312-981-7200. John Duffy is actually sitting here with me in studio already. I do want to say that that number I gave, 312-981-7200, is the same for the text or the phone. So if anybody has comments, questions, etc. 312-981-7200. Good evening, John Duffy.
Hello, Hannah Stanley. How are you tonight?
I am gosh darn excellent, and I'm happy to be here, and I'm always happy to have you in studio with me. Dude, the story... Yeah, I just said dude. Dude, the story of the week has been not Christmas, not gun violence in the city.
Right.
It's been Steve Harvey.
Steve Harvey, of all guys.
Why? Why? All right, we are not... I want to talk about this in a little bit because I really want people's involvement in this conversation. If you have missed it, I applaud you because that means you are completely unplugged from all devices and anything social media, and you've not watched TV or listened to the radio. So if you're just joining us and don't know what happened, let me share. And then, like I said, we're going to talk about this in the next segment. Steve Harvey hosted Miss Universe and did a fine job, from what I understand. I didn't watch it. But at the very, very end, he announced Miss Columbia as the winner. Au contraire, she was not. She was the first runner-up. And people went bonkers. As I said, I did not watch this. But if you have opinions on this, start lining them up because I want to know why. This is an interesting topic. You are on the Steve Harvey Show frequently.
I am. I'm lucky enough to be a guest on occasion and sit across from Steve, and so I might have a slight bias as far as this all goes.
But also insight to the man himself, which that's why I want to chat with you about this. The other thing beyond that, this is a time of year where people are looking back because they're looking ahead. And they're looking, you know, it's New Year's resolution planning time.
Right.
And Jan is my producer tonight, and he and I have been talking about so many things as far as resolutions and planning and moving forward and establishing those good habits.
Yeah.
Because in my opinion, that's really what it is a resolution is not, I feel like saying you want to lose 30 pounds is great, but it's making the habit of how to get there.
Right. You've got to set up some kind of plan with steps that are really clear if you're going to make a commitment to yourself for change. Otherwise, it's fleeting, and it's that old January joke of the gyms being filled and then emptying February 1st.
Because I actually was joking with my husband. I went to the gym this morning, and I was like, well, I got to get there now to claim my treadmill so I can, like, next week, I don't feel like I'm such a poser. But it was fuller than I would have imagined.
I
also found it funny because my gym is actually closed on January 1st. And I was like, that doesn't seem like good business, but whatever. It's a community thing, and so they can do whatever they want. There are systems that we're going to talk about how to make those resolutions more possibly successful. This is also a big time for holiday and seasonal depression, which we read about, if that is in fact the case.
Absolutely. So true.
All right. As I mentioned, Dr. John Duffy, 312-981-7200. We're going to take a quick break so we have a longer segment to talk about mistakes, and a particular one by Mr. Steve Harvey. That'll be next on Hannah Stanley, Girls Night Out, WGN. Hannah Stanley, this is Girls Night Out on WGN. I have, I'm Hannah Stanley. See how that works? 312-981-7200 is the number. We've got calls starting to line up. Right now, Dr. John Duffy is in studio with me. And I have a three-hour show planned for a two-hour slot. So we're going to cram as much of this stuff in as we can. And a lot of it involves you. So, and you were so kind. You're like, we'll stay as long as it makes sense. And
absolutely.
I was like,
we'll
it makes sense till about midnight. So we'll see. We'll see how this all goes. First and foremost, people you've been on my show. You've been on with Bill and Wendy. You've been on other shows. But you are on with Steve Harvey on his daytime talk show.
Yes.
Frequently.
Yeah.
Frequently enough where people could be like, I know that guy. I know Dr. John Duffy.
I suppose it's possible.
Yes, it's possible.
I've been recognized in Oberweis.
That's spectacular. That's absolutely outstanding. I love that. Of all the places you could have been recognized, Oberweis makes it funnier.
No kidding.
So Steve Harvey is a big story right now because he did something that, oh gosh, made him human.
Absolutely true, right?
He did it on a gigantic Universal stage.
Yeah.
Literally. The Miss Universe pageant, and here's what I find so fascinating about this. Yun is producing me tonight, and Yun said, can anybody name three of the last 20 Miss Universes? And we were like, no.
No, not
this,
a chance.
This culturally, I don't even know what the ratings are, but it's sort of a non-entity.
I think more so than ever, right?
Right? I mean, it's not destination viewing, in my opinion. I was shocked at how many people, because I found out because I was scrolling through the Twitter. And I was like, wait, Miss Universe was on? I didn't even know. And it because it wasn't a thing, I didn't see any promotions for it, no commercials. I just, for me, it's not on my radar. The number of people who were like, OMG, Steve Harvey, biggest screw up ever. It had to be people glomming on. Because there's no way that many people watch Miss Universe.
Oh, I think that's right. I think social media spread it, and then people were able to kind of, you know, circle back and watch those few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think that's how it went
viral fast.
Yeah.
And that clip of it, whoever was watching it made that into a Vine or whatever that's called.
Right.
And then it was done. Okay. To bring you up to speed, for those who are unaware, Steve Harvey, and this was last week sometime, I think Monday maybe, Sunday or Monday, he announced the wrong winner.
Correct.
Of the Miss Universe pageant. He said it was Miss Colombia. It was, in fact, Miss Philippines.
Right.
If there was ever a moment of someone, and I'm deviating just a quick second, being more gracious and handling a situation better, boy, hats off to Miss Colombia, because how ridiculous is that situation? You are on top of the world. You flipping won Miss Universe. Oh, but you didn't.
Right. And you're standing up there for
quite
some time.
And you're standing there smiling, permagrin.
Right.
And then going, okay, this is completely uncharted territory. How do we handle this?
Yeah.
But it's also uncharted. I mean, people make mistakes on live TV frequently. It's a thing. Not really in this manner. Steve Harvey really owned it, where he came out, apologized, showed the card and how he misread it, and then later went on Twitter and owned it and apologized again, and then kind of backed away from it.
Right. Yeah.
Why do people love the fact that he made this mistake and they're just browbeating him?
You know, I think it's just so juicy when something like this happens. You know, knowing him a little bit, I found myself kind of oddly defensive. Like, hey, everybody,
he's my guy.
But if it were somebody else hosting that, I can imagine in my own mind, I would have thought, wow, that's really funny. That's really juicy. I want to see everything about that. I think we're just drawn toward kind of that mistake on that kind of stage, you know, where it's kind of feels like earth shaking, you know, like nothing like this has ever happened before. What a big deal.
It really is interesting in that so many people feel like they're casting the first stone, if you will.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Nobody lives in a glass house in this neighborhood because they're all throwing stones. Sharon is on the phone. Sharon, your comments, please.
Hi. Well, I agree. It was embarrassing, but at the same time, the one thing that I do not like about the Miss Universe pageant, the Miss America pageant, all of them, they always announce the runner-up.
Right.
Why don't you just say who the winner is?
Right, right.
I
because,
mean, it's
like,
very
by default.
Confusing.
Right, right.
It's very confusing. You're standing up there and go, well, who won? You know, and they say this name, and she didn't get it. But, and then they had this mistake, and he's human. And anybody that's been put in front of a crowd and who has transposed something knows how it feels. You feel like an idiot. But at the same time, why in the world do they announce their first runner-up? Just we know there's two women.
Right.
Just announce the winner.
Just say Miss Universe is such and such. Oh, and by the way, first runner-up would obviously be Miss Columbia. Have you seen the card, Sharon?
No, I did not. You know what? They had it on the news that night. That's the only way I knew about it.
Yeah, it was on the news, and then I've seen a close-up of the card, and I have to tell you, if design has ever been important, and it is, this would be one of those cases where it's literally written in the opposite corner of the first and second runner-up, and then it's like in the same font, but it's down. It's just, I understand, I really, really do, how in the heat of the moment, you would maybe say it incorrectly.
And I don't even know if we can really get a good handle on what the heat of the moment feels like when you're the guy reading the card. You've never read the card before.
Right. This was his first time. Yeah. Sharon, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I enjoy your program.
Thank you. It really is fascinating to me that I have not seen other hosts defending or condemning him.
Nor have I. I have to
agree. Trump said this would never have happened if I still owned it. That's crap.
That's something
entirely possible. It could have. Although maybe Trump would have been more influential in how that card was written.
Right.
Perhaps that card was written differently when he was in charge. Who knows?
Certainly possible.
However, people who are in that line of work, and I'm not even putting myself in it because live radio is very different than live Miss Universe.
Right.
It's... no one understands that. It is a very specialized group of people who could have ever been in that. And when we have when we have people who are, I'll say, mean, right, on texts, we get
right.
Texters who text in and tell us terrible things about ourselves and how we do our job. I always find it just so interesting that they need to be mean. That they need to, like, what is wrong in your life that you need to make someone else feel bad? If it's another host who says to me, you maybe do it this way, or think about doing it this way, or it's really bad when you do it that way. And then I go, okay, because they have the experience.
Right, right,
In they understand what we've gone through. So if Bert Parks came back and said, oh man, did you ever screw up? Then that would be different to me.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think social media kind of allows for the lowest common denominator to come out and say the meanest possible things, because I think we like it when somebody who's in a fairly lofty position is brought way back down to earth, you know, in a very, you know, dramatic fashion.
All right, but, there's a name I won't say on the air, but there's a family that's in a particularly lofty position for maybe reasons that I don't necessarily understand. They've made mistakes. They've done things wrong and they've been ripped on. And I still try, personally, I try not to take pleasure in that because we've all been there.
Right.
But why is it that people feel they need to comment, that they feel they need to be inclusive and like, Steve Harvey.
Right, right. Well, I think part of it is that we all kind of collectively have this option because of social media being part of the fame machine. So this family that you're talking about, I think people like to weigh in on certain families and certain people who are famous and, you know, let their opinions be known in a public forum. And here, something dramatic happens and people have this ability to create a meme or to make a joke and, you know, really create something where they're part of a dialogue that they would have nothing to do with 10 years ago. It would just be like, oh, wow, Steve Harvey made a big mistake on TV. Nobody would ever know what they thought about that.
Right.
But, you know, if you come up with the most clever thing to say about it, all of a sudden, you know, you get 1,000 likes and you feel like something's happening.
Because people are using their social media numbers to validate themselves.
Very much so. Yeah.
So with him, with Steve Harvey having comedy as a background and having him being able to see and maybe even picking fun at other people.
Right.
I've not seen him do stand up, but I have on TV, but it was a long time ago. But he himself, somebody made a meme that was him saying Happy Easter yesterday, which is very funny. Yep. He himself put out a picture of himself that said either Merry Easter or Happy Easter, y'all. He was able to take it and own that story.
Absolutely. I mean, and if you think about it, it's kind of like it kind of feeds into that perception that no publicity is bad publicity, right? You know, like
right.
Here, somehow this is going to work out for him. And from what I understand, the pageant has offered to
They've
have
offered
him back.
Yeah. Well, for goodness sakes, this is the most publicity they've gotten in years
right.
since Trump bought them. And then they were like, yeah, I don't know if that's the publicity we want.
Right.
But it really, somebody actually posted, it was a friend of mine who didn't say, you know, hey, Brene, about the scandal. But what they said was, this is possibly the greatest publicity stunt ever.
Like, there was some thought about that, you know, yes. Boy, was this all staged and planned? And I suspect not, but I get the idea.
I suspect not, because this could have really backfired on his career.
Absolutely.
And ultimately, it was painful
yeah.
to Miss Columbia and her family and those who were so excited while being runner-up. Because if Miss Philippines cannot, you know, can complete her duties as Miss Universe, obviously we have
Columbia.
A first runner up. But it really is something that I was shocked as he knew. He knew the moment she was crowned, somebody ran over and was like, dude, did you screw this up?
Yes, this went bad quickly, I think.
But
yes.
But for it to have played out for the whole, I guess they call it a coronation, I don't know, but the crowning and the walk and the blah, 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 then for them to go through this, that was damaging, I would think, long, at least upsetting for Miss Columbia and her people.
It had to be. I mean, it went on for a very long time. And, you know, and this is like the very, very important moment in her life, regardless of what we all think of pageants. You prepare for a lifetime to get to that stage. And, you know, you think, boy, I think I might have won this thing.
This is it.
But I'm not sure.
No, but she really did win it.
Yeah.
Oh, but she didn't.
Right. Right.
And Miss Philippines just kind of sat there like, I'm not entirely sure what's going on. Because truthfully, I'm sitting from her perspective, if I were to be her, I have no idea if there was a language barrier.
I thought about that too.
But she and Miss Columbia were both kind of standing there going, I don't know what is happening.
Yeah.
Are we being punked? I highly doubt they know who Ashton Kutcher is. But but it really just seemed like so unprecedented that and if there was in fact a language barrier, she has no idea what's going on because this is not something they rehearsed.
No, and you really had to feel for both of those women. That had to be a brutal few minutes.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. All right. We are coming back. So much seasonal stuff we have to talk about and how we can better prepare for the new year and how to go through it happier and healthier. John Duffy, Dr. John Duffy, joining me, Hannah Stanley. This is Girls Night Out on WGN. Hannah Stanley, this is Girls Night Out with Hannah Stanley. You're listening to WGN. We are live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, where there are an exorbitant amount of people out enjoying the weather on December 26th.
Yeah.
It feels like an October 26th, maybe. It actually feels more like a September 26th.
It does.
This weather is to be savored, people. We got a week coming that's going to be a little bit chillier and possibly some snow. But in the meantime, get on out there. It's pretty gosh darn nice. Joining me in studio is Dr. John Duffy. You know him from here. You know him from the Bill and Wendy show. He's been on a couple of different other programs, including Steve Harvey. If you missed it, we were just talking about the Steve Harvey. I don't even want to say the screw up, the Steve Harvey mistake.
Yeah.
He made a mistake. He owned his mistake. He moved on from his mistake.
There was something to be learned from it, right? It was an honest mistake, and he did kind of take full accountability for it. And now he's kind of making light of it and, you know.
But I love that there's the lesson in that,
yeah.
In owning your mistake. You don't blame other people for it. He didn't go, well, this card was terribly written, although it was.
Right. It was.
He let everybody else come to that conclusion on their own. Like, I would have screwed that up, too.
Right.
But really, on that big of a platform, to have made that mistake and handled it so graciously, he apologized. He fixed it. He apologized. He fixed it. He apologized again. And now he's making fun.
Yep.
He's poking fun at himself because that's the best way to... make the haters go.
It is. It's pretty powerful, and it feels like kind of something that's come full circle, right? I mean, once you're kind of like past it and making fun of it on your own, you feel like, okay.
Yeah, there's stages of grieving.
Yes.
And so this is like, if he's at the, like, let's make light of it, good for him.
Good for him.
Way to own that story.
Absolutely.
you did it, and now let's realize that it was gosh darn funny in the long run.
Right.
Even though the long run was like less than a week ago. Here's the thing. We are all done with the gift-giving holidays for the most part. Hanukkah's come and gone. Christmas was done as of yesterday at about 9:30 in the morning. Now is the time where we have disappointment. There are a couple of different nuanced sides to this, one of which are kids freaking out. And Jan, can you play that clip, please?
It was out of stock.
Okay, so this little kid freaking out because he received the wrong version of a gift, which I think we can all agree could have been handled better by the child. But given his mom or whoever was running the camera, given her response, I feel like that might be kind of the tone that they have in their house.
I would imagine that's probably right, right?
It that the was SKU out number of stock. Matters. Yeah. Yes. So, you know, instead of saying, well, I know, but I want you to understand that we're getting it, we'll just exchange it later when it's back in stock. It was like she was just not having it. Like that stress had boiled over. Or that's how they always talk to each other.
Right.
There's the potential always for holiday disappointment from the kids' side, right?
Absolutely.
So how can we best manage it, even though we're past it? We're past managing. But how can we, going forward for birthdays and other gift-giving occasions, not necessarily have the kids think that they asked for it on a list and they should get it? Right. I asked Santa. Santa should have brought it.
So part of it is probably laying out something akin to realistic expectations, right? You know, like instead of like, you know, boy, I don't know, maybe Santa will bring that for you. You know, maybe you'll get a pony when you're pretty sure like, well, that probably isn't going to happen. You know, like laying out something that might make a little more sense. So
Santa knows we don't have acreage.
Yeah, like, we don't have acreage. Right. The pony's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Santa's not no dummy.
Yeah.
Right.
How would that fit on the sleigh?
Right.
I don't know. Yeah.
Right. So laying out some realistic expectations. And then I think when disappointment actually happens, to treat it to some extent like a teachable moment, like, you know, maybe not in the immediate aftermath, but at some point to sit down and say, you know, like, we're really grateful for all the things we have and you got a lot of great stuff. And this one thing isn't going to ruin your life or your Christmas or anything else unless you let it.
With kids having, I mean, how old do they need to be before we can have them start understanding what we're trying to get?
Yeah.
There?
Yeah. You know, I think it's more a matter of maturity level than age, because sometimes you get a 4-year-old who can wrap their brain around that and say, okay, makes sense. Good. I'm grateful for everything I've got. Sometimes you get an 11-year-old who's going to tantrum about not getting the exact right Star Wars figurine.
Right.
You know? So,
well, and this kid, I would guess this kid was somewhere between 7 and 9 in the video that we just listened. It's a video. It's online. You can find it. But he freaked because he had the 2015 version, not the 2016 version.
Right, right, right. Well, okay. So let me throw out a little thought here. I think part of it also has to do with the tone you set in your family, not just around Christmas, but all year round. Like when I listen to that young man, I think, well, here's a guy who hasn't been taught to tolerate a whole lot of frustration in his life. So he's not particularly resilient. And so if in July you start to work on building resilience in a kid and frustration tolerance, in other words, things might not go perfectly, but I can handle that. If mom says no to a candy bar at the store, I'll deal.
Okay.
And sometimes that stuff builds into, you know, I can handle it when I don't get precisely the Christmas gift I want, you know?
Or like if they get, and I mean, it's so challenging. I now, as of the other day, I have my 6th niece/nephew. There's a lot of people buying gifts for those kids.
Right.
And there has to be a lot of organization and communication. So you're going to have sometimes duplicates.
Yep.
And the graciousness of the child receiving, instead of going, ugh, already got this Lego set, you crazy person. Why wouldn't you have known not to get me this one?
Right. Right.
So how do you teach that?
Right. Well, a big part of that, honestly, is modeling it. I mean, I don't know if you've seen it, but I've seen a number of adults who are not particularly gracious or will have a pile for keepers and a pile for losers. You know what I mean? And it's not really that well hidden what the keepers are and what the losers are. And if you're modeling something that is less than gracious, I think it may be reasonable to expect that from your kids.
All right. So do we actually verbalize it by saying, this was a gift that he didn't really like, but did you see how I handled it? This is how I want you to handle it. Or are they going to pick up on that?
I don't even think you have to verbalize it. Right. I think we overdo the lecture of, you know, like, this is how you express gratitude.
I'm a talk show host. This is what I do. I talk.
But I'm not against that. But I think what packs way more punch is to model it, is to let your kids see that you're gracious, that you're, you know, no matter what you get, even if it's something you couldn't have possibly any interest in, that you act as if it's, you know, this great gift and you express that gratitude, you know. And if your kids see that, they're more likely to do the same. They're more likely to fall in line. The lecture might be unnecessary.
All right. We all have been kids and we've all known the thrill of running down the stairs and seeing what Santa brought.
Yeah.
And how do we then... we hopefully evolve into adults who understand that it's really the effort that goes into that present, not the Santa gifts. We get that. It's his job. But it's the effort in what my mom went through to get you the gift that she thought was the perfect fit, or your uncle went through, whatever. How do we teach them?
Yep.
To understand that the gift is really in the effort and not what you unwrapped. Now, at what point do they start understanding that?
And now you'll pardon my doublespeak, because I'll go back to like age and maturity level.
Right.
Really young kids, Christmas is magic, right? And you know, you just,
yeah.
So you're not teaching them much of anything.
It's
other
Disney
than
in their living room.
Exactly. Yeah. Like this is a reprieve from having to be appropriate. You know, you want to just go crazy and tear stuff open and wow, is this cool? And this one not so much, but cool that Santa brought it for me.
Yeah. Thanks, new jams.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Socks. Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Woo.
Right. And but once you realize that your child is of an age where they don't have this really long list of things they want, they're a little more mature, they can tolerate things a little bit more, then I think it's okay to lay out the expectation like, you know what? You're going to have to be gracious no matter what you get. And some stuff you're going to get from your aunts and uncles might be duplicates, might not be stuff you love, but you have to act as if you love it, because that's the thought that counts.
So you can actually verbalize it then.
I think you can verbalize it then.
And
once
say, you know
once
what?
You know they
put
can hear
so much into this.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And kids, by the way, are good at receiving that message. I've seen kids who at younger ages are, you know, acting that really kind of juicy, selfish, I love Christmas, I want all the goods kind of way, which is fine. I think I was one of those kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen kids make the transition when they realize, oh, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate this. You know, like I've watched it recently in the last few days, and it's impressive when a kid can kind of say, when you know, as you watch, I don't think this is going to be this kid's favorite thing in their life. And yet still they act in a gracious way.
All right. So we almost want to give them little gifts to like test that.
Right, right, right. Test the tipping point.
Look, honey, a new toothbrush. Oh, gee, this is so good. My plaque thanks you.
Right.
Or doesn't. I guess it's the opposite. It was... The moment that I thought was very interesting to me, you've met both of my children, Grayson and Preston. Preston is 5, my daughter, and she found a Lego set that she thought her brother would really, really like and pointed it out to him. And he was like, oh, that's really awesome. And they do their Santa list and they do their parent list. And we've tried to have conversations like, just because you ask for it doesn't mean it's coming.
Right.
But she told him to put it on his sister list. And I was like, oh, my sweet girl wants to focus on getting her brother something. Put that on your sister list.
And you've got to look at that as a parenting win, right?
I was a little bit, yeah, that was a moment where I was like, oh, thank God. that one's okay. I'm just going to let her raise herself.
Absolutely.
I can only screw her up. All right. Hannah Stanley, Dr. John Duffy, sitting in with me for the time being and possibly the whole show. We'll see. 312-981-7200. We're taking your calls, and we've got some calls lining up, so please get in on those. That is also the text line if you have questions or comments. We will be back on WGN right after this. Hannah Stanley, this is Girls Night Out on WGN. Allstate Showcase Studio is on Michigan Avenue. If you happen to be downtown, we invite you to wander on by and wave at us. And likely we will wave right back. And also pop on in to Tribune Tower. That lobby is open 24/7 and it is gorgeous if you have not been here. Dr. John Duffy joins me in studio as you have the whole time. You, if you're at home going, I know this guy. Yeah, you do. Because you watch the Steve Harvey. You watch that and you see him and you go, man, that guy's smart. And I say, yes, he is. And that's why he's here. We are talking about all kinds of different things. We already talked about Steve Harvey. We talked about handling our kids and building up their frustration tolerance and teaching them to be gracious humans in light of disappointment, both gift and otherwise, because they're going to face it their entire lives.
Absolutely.
This is not a thing that's going to go away just because they got the wrong version of some game.
Right. No, it's laying the groundwork for just about everything we do as parents is laying the groundwork for what our kids are going to be like as adults one day.
All right. So when I teach you this now, it's because I want you to be a decent human later.
Yep. I always remind parents we're raising not children, we're raising adults.
Okay.
Right? We're just doing it in slow motion.
We have to get them to where we want them to be.
Exactly. So think long game. Don't think about this little thing right here. Think 10, 20 years down the road. How do I want this person to be?
Okay. So all right. We have a call on the line, and 312-981-7200 is the number. You can text in or call in if you have questions. Dr. John Duffy is a psychologist. So those are your questions can be focused on there and how to handle things. We're going to talk about seasonal depression, holiday depression, and also disappointment that adults have too, because there's a big buildup and then all of a sudden it's done.
Absolutely. It's like when a wedding is done or when any kind of major event, there's always a letdown, almost always.
No, I get that with the wedding and kind of the baby, like your second baby is not the same as your first baby because like you don't get the attention.
Right, right.
Which that's not why I was in that situation. I wanted kids. I didn't want the attention, but there's still like, oh, now it's over. Okay.
Right. Yeah. And the first one's bigger deal.
There's nothing more special anymore.
Right. Right?
I've been married. I've been the bride. I've been the bride to be. And then now, okay. So the Christmas buildup is like that as well. And Hanukkah, et cetera. Although Hanukkah isn't Christmas. It's not
Hanukkah isn't Christmas.
It's not the equivalent.
Different scale, right?
It's a very different scale. And Amy Guth explained this to me and Mark Carman explained this to me. So now I feel like I'm a little bit more informed than I was. We actually have Jill on the phone with a question about a chronic illness. Jill.
Yes. Real quick, I got to tell you a story. I got a video from a Facebook friend of her granddaughter, and she said to the little girl in a pajama sitting on the floor, what do you want for Christmas? And the little girl said, I want everybody to be happy.
That's a parenting win.
That is a parenting win, right? No intervention necessary there, Jill.
No.
No, they're very impressive. My question is, I deal with a chronic illness that's been like 23 years, and, you know, it involves a lot of fatigue and health problems, and it's very hard to deal with work. I work just pool and family members because they're like, well, just get up. Why don't you, you'll feel better if you get up. Once you get to work, you'll feel better if you work more and
because you don't look lazy.
Yeah, right, right. And it's like they don't get that when you do push yourself, you wind up. In fact, I work Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, second shift. I got called in that you're just in bed for 3 days, and it's difficult. I think I'm a people pleaser, so it's hard for me to say no. And then it's been going on so long that there's just no convincing these people that, no, you have to rest. You have to. So how do I deal with that? Like maybe learning to say no better or dealing with people who don't
who don't
believe
get
you're
it.
Sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you can think your way out of it or act your way out of it.
Right, right. Oh, right. That's the advice you're getting. And I actually, Jill, to be honest, I can understand that people feel that way about you. I can sense mm-hmm. that you have this like kind of like big positive energy, and maybe some people think, oh, you're so close, you sound fine, you know, like
right.
but you've been suffering this thing for a very, very long time, you know. So in a way, I give you a lot of credit for being an upbeat person, or seeming like an upbeat mm-hmm. person despite all that. Yeah, and I like your idea of kind of taking advantage of the new year to try to do something different. Where I can see you getting stuck, and almost any of us getting stuck in this kind of circumstance, mm-hmm. is feeling like, you know what, I want to get through there and change other people's opinions, right? You know, like I want people mm-hmm. to understand what I'm going through.
Right.
My bias would be maybe just for the time being to kind of shift the focus on you and what you can do to feel better for yourself. So I assume that you talk to your MD and you talk about what you can do to manage your discomfort. But right. my bias, if I had a thought about an intervention or two, I would consider talking to a therapist and maybe mm-hmm. working on like meditation or thinking about what interventions you haven't used for yourself that might create a circumstance where you feel better and start to, you know, literally feel better physically and think a little bit differently. And I suspect that then the positive opinions of other people will follow that. But I think if your initial impulse is, I want people to see what I'm going through and understand what I'm going through, it sounds like you've been down that road for maybe a couple of decades, and that's mm-hmm. that's been brick walls. So it might right. be an interesting time to turn inward and do what you need to do for yourself, and there might be really positive, good feeling results at the back end of that.
Or at least come to terms with the fact that they're not going to understand it because they don't right. know specifically where they're going to, and be okay with that.
Right.
Because for me, I'm always looking for the approval, and if I don't get it, then I'm like, why?
Yeah. Yeah. And you may even, without that approval, get down on yourself about, you know, well, maybe I should be feeling differently than I do, even though I feel terribly, you know. But mm-hmm. But I think you want to, if nobody else is going to validate you, validate yourself initially. You know what I mean?
Right.
And give yourself the goodwill of recognizing, yes, I'm going through something, but I'm also doing pretty well in light of that, because it sounds like you are.
Yeah, I am. It's pretty stable. And I think, you're right. You know, you can't control other people's thinking, only your own. And I know that what I've been thinking a lot is just trying to take better care of myself. You know, eat better, keep better hours, say no more. You know, rather, like in the old days, I would have said, I want to lose weight to look better.
Right.
You mm-hmm. know, now it's like, I want to eat healthy to feel better and to be as well as I can be with this problem, and you know, not do things like maybe quitting soda or caffeine, or you know, just eating much, you know, less junk, more fruits, vegetables.
But, and that's going to make you feel better internally, but so is saying no to some things.
Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yes, I think so.
Because then they don't have the opportunity to make you feel bad and say, well, if you could just be like, no, this is what needs to happen for me. I'm
right.
owning
right.
this.
Right.
That's
right.
what I say to you, Jill. Right. That's what I want you to do for you.
Yeah, right. Because, yeah, I'm hitting a stone wall with it's actually a sister. And she means well. She loves me and she means well. But she's a very black and white person. I always say she's an accountant and my brother-in-law's an engineer. And I say they're kind of all or nothing people, you know, whereas this is a lot of shades of gray to it. You know, good days, bad days, really bad days. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to having a healthier New Year, so, and taking better care of myself.
Well,
so.
Good
that
for
sounds
you.
Like great advice.
All right. Well, Jill, thank you so much for your call, and
thank
Happy New
so
Year.
Much. Happy New Year to you, too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. That is something that the you don't look sick is a thing.
And, oh, it's a terrible
thing. And it's so hard.
It's a difficult thing.
It is a difficult
yeah.
thing. And for people who don't have someone close to them who goes through this, enough for that person to get it. Man, that it's hard.
Right.
Especially like her sister loves her and wants to spend time with her. And we get that.
Right. Right.
That's a tough one. So good for her for taking the step and asking interesting and good, healthy questions. Dr. John Duffy, you know him from Steve Harvey. He is on the show with me tonight. I am Hannah Stanley. This is Girls Night Out, and we are going to come right back and get you to the news after this break. Tom Petty, nice, hon. A little Learning to Fly. So appropriate. Hannah Stanley, this is Girls Night Out on WGN. This is the last Girls Night Out. Amy Guth actually just popped her head in studio. She's going to join me in a little bit and talk about the new show that will be filling this time slot going forward, which she will be hosting and carrying you through. And she's delightful. If you don't stay up late enough to listen to her typically, boy, are you guys in for a treat. I just adore her. Dr. John Duffy joins me in studio and has for the entire show. And we'll continue to, because we have, Jan and I were doing the show prep and we were whiteboarding it, but it was actually on paper. And it was, I was like, okay, we've got John Duffy. And I was like writing down all of the stuff. And then every other topic I came out with, I was like, and we can also talk to him about that. And we can also talk to him about that. So here's one of the things we're going to talk about. We've covered kids and handling their frustration and their disappointment and maybe what they did or did not get.
That we have. We've solved that.
All right. We fixed that. Yeah. We've handled the fact that while you are defensive of Steve Harvey because he's your guy, mm-hmm. Boy, did he handle that situation well.
Yes. Yes.
It
kudos
sucked.
To him. Yeah.
I am sad for him and for those two girls and their families that that happened,
yeah.
Which is, of course, the Miss Universe screw up. But that's what it was.
Yeah.
Everybody move on.
It was a mistake. Yeah.
Glass houses we do not live in.
Amen.
All right. I read all the time that this is the time of year for seasonal depression and holidays are the time of greatest rates of suicide. Is that accurate?
Actually, it is. You know, okay. So I'm a therapist and oddly enough, business is strikingly good this time of year. It really
is. So people
really
are seeking help, which is
great.
Oh,
man. Yeah. Like you wouldn't believe, a lot of people get very depressed this time of year. I think part of it is that everything gets heightened, right? You know, so everything's big this time of year, right? Where some people who are jubilant about out buying gifts and they're out and about down here on Michigan Avenue and everything is bright and jubilant. But there are a whole lot of people who are either lonely or depressed going into the holiday season who really just aren't feeling it. And as a result of not feeling it, really feel down. Particularly down.
All right. So in literature, there's the foil, right? Where you have the good character to make, or you have the bad character to make the good character look that much bigger,
right,
and better and gooder, which I know is not a word. Nobody needs to text. But if you want to, it's 312-981-7200. And that's the same as the call-in line. Is it that kind of thing where people feel worse because they feel everybody else is better?
Yeah, I think part of it is a comparison. It's kind of like, boy, everybody, and I do hear this a lot. Everybody's out there. Everyone's with their family. Everyone's with their friends. Everybody's happy. So we make these assumptions. And oftentimes I find people who are depressed around this time of year make these assumptions about what's going on behind every door. Usually errant assumptions, right? I mean, not every family is perfectly happy. You never know. But it looks pretty good. From the outside, it looks pretty good. And so by comparison, a lot of people feel like their lives don't look so great, or this year, this season, don't look particularly good. And compounding that is something I think you're heading toward, is that the days are short, it's cold, it's dark. And so that seasonal depression that hits a lot of people, all of this comes for some people all at the same time. So I work with some people this time of year who are very active and engaged most of the year, but come December 10th or so, they begin to wind down and depression begins to set in. And it's like you could time a clock to it.
All right. So are these people who suffer or battle depression throughout the year and it gets worse? Or are these people who are, or I don't want to say healthy because that's not it, but they can manage it the rest of the year, but then come the winter, it hits.
Yes.
okay.
Yes, it actually is both of those. I think people who tend toward depression are likely to be more depressed this time of year. Some people who feel pretty good the rest of the year emotionally, depression tends to set in. There's this melancholy. The other element that we're not talking about, but that might be kind of important, is losses that families have had kind of become more pronounced. The idea of the empty chair at the end of the table, right?
You sure. know what I mean? Like, this is the first year without so-and-so.
Yep, exactly.
Or the 10th.
Right. And some people, like, it lingers year after year after year, and especially if the loss took place within a couple of months of this time of year. The whole winter month time period bears specific meaning that is very, very different than the jubilance of Christmas, you know?
Right. And we're more homebound because typically the weather is not like it is.
Right.
So we're like inside with each other.
Yeah.
Texter to 312-981-7200 says, I'm single and I see all my friends with their families and I feel lonely. He said more lonely, or she.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, that is not an uncommon feeling at all. And the advice is specious. It may not be the greatest advice, but it's typically, if you feel lonely this time of year, get out and do something. And this might feel so disingenuous, but the person I worked with, who I would argue was probably having the most difficult time of year a year ago, she decided to go and volunteer at a soup kitchen. So she wasn't with family, she wasn't with friends, she was with strangers, but she would argue that was the best holiday season she's ever had in her life, just because she felt generous, she felt connected, it felt meaningful to her.
All right, so there were genuine reasons for that and not that it put in perspective that she didn't have it that bad?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was that. I think it also felt like, okay, I've made some use out of this time. Despite the fact that I don't feel particularly good, I've made other people feel good. And that alone has meaning.
It's the giving.
Yes.
Which is the whole reason this is all how it's supposed to be. Has your business kicked up this time of year since social media has kicked up?
I would say yes. And I think there is some parallel there. And that's not necessarily included in this time of year, but it definitely is amplified because think about what we put up on social media.
It's very interesting because what I see is happy families and this is what we're doing and yay us. And I went to the greatest holiday party or I got the greatest gift. And then I always feel like there's the where somebody maybe is genuinely reaching out. Like, I feel terrible.
Right.
And I really don't know what to do in that case.
Social media for that purpose always confounds me a little bit because I think it's very difficult and puts kind of friends and family in a difficult spot when you're wah-wah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you're expecting like, I don't know.
Debbie Downer posts like, you know, this is great, but suicides go up. And you're like,
Right. And it's very hard to gauge like, okay, how serious is this? Right. So I think it puts people in kind of a difficult position. One anecdote I'll throw out is a year ago, there was a family in the area where I practice, and they had a Christmas card that was beautiful. It's a beautiful family. And I had one of the young men in the family who came in and gave me the card, you know, like, oh, my family is very grateful to you for the work you've done with me. And he said, we're all smiling in this picture, but we're not all happy. You know, he kind of pointed out really clearly, like,
you really know us.
Well, and it's important to remember that, you know, like even the Christmas cards that you get in the mail, this is a conjured happy time. But that doesn't mean you're looking at a family with no problems, because in my experience, you never are looking at a family with no problems.
Right.
So I think sometimes at this time of year, we idealize what's going on in other people's houses when in fact, typically, most of us don't have ideal things going on. You know, there's very nice things going on. Sometimes there's tension. Sometimes there's drama. So I'm always hesitant to encourage people to, you know, embrace that ideal and instead to kind of assume like what you have might not be so bad.
There's an episode of The Goldbergs. I don't know if you watch it, but for those who do, where the mom, the family who was Jewish, went to a family who celebrated Christmas. They went to their house.
Right.
And she was jealous of how decored the house was and how warm and loving it felt. And so she was like, we are going to do with a Jewish version of Christmas and, you know, decorated the house and had a Hanukkah bush and all these different things, and really came to terms with the fact that, finally the neighbor was outside crying because their house, their life isn't perfect. And it had just, all she had seen was the snapshot of what they wanted you to see. And I think that's what a lot of people put on social media.
By and large, I bet it's 95% of what people put out on social media, right? The snapshot, the beautiful snapshot.
I got to tell you, I like seeing people's beautiful snapshots.
It's fun. It's great to see what the best is and when people, your friends and family are happy.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, their kids are cute and they're growing so much, and how great for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because when people say, I'm going to be lonely for forever, I don't know what to do. It makes me very uncomfortable.
Right, right. And social media, in all likelihood, is not the space for that sentiment.
No, because I wish that they would actually contact me and say, no, I need some help.
How about that?
How can we go hang out? Because I'm really lonely. Because having it on social media, I don't know how sincere that is, or if they're just trying, if they're reacting. It's very uncomfortable.
And if I can throw a point out here, what you just said is what a lot of people don't believe. Right. A lot of people who are depressed would say nobody wants to hear about my problems, especially at a time of year. But I think a lot of us would say, no, let me know. I mean, if there's anything I could do to help, if I can just lend an ear, that would make me feel good to be helping you. And I think sometimes when we're down, we miss that.
But why? Huh. All right. So is it a thing where I see somebody post this on social media? At what point do I have to step in and go, okay, how can I help? Should I do that right away? Because I feel awkward publicly doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. My bias is always, you know, and then we can get down to the nuts and bolts of social media, but, you know, either a direct message, a phone call, a text, you know, something that's not so public.
Even someone I don't know very well, but I'm Facebook friends with.
Yeah.
Just direct message them and go, hey, if you need help.
If you're inclined.
I know John Duffy.
Yeah, right. In those days when I'm super down, if you're inclined to help, feel free to reach out
here's a psychologist
form.
I know that is really good. All right. Dr. John Duffy joining me, Hannah Stanley. This is Girls Night Out on WGN. More after this. So much to cover in so little time. Hannah Stanley tonight. This is Girls Night Out for the next 38 and a half minutes. I just did math backwards. Look at me. That's exciting. Hannah Stanley, as I mentioned, that's me. And then Dr. John Duffy, psychologist that you would know from Steve Harvey, of course. Yeah, that's Steve Harvey. We've already talked about it. We're done talking about that. He made a mistake. We're all moving on. And then Amy Guth has joined me in studio, which is spectacular.
Hi there.
Hi, how are you? You actually wanted to add some stuff to what we were just talking about, which was reaching out to people online.
Yeah, because you know what? I think people have a harder and harder time doing that kind of direct conversation. And I think if you're already feeling blue, you already feel like you're imposing. So if people say, even if they're vague booking and they just kind of like, oh, it's really great that everyone's doing so well today. To me, I'll go, hey, how you doing? Yeah. I did that four times yesterday because I saw people just having some vague posts that maybe could be a cry for help. So I was just like, hi, are you doing okay?
And you direct message or you?
Yeah, privately.
Okay.
Hey, what's up? You doing okay?
Okay.
Because I think that's important. I also think it's important to bear in mind that the holidays or Christmas time in particular can be hard for people even that don't celebrate Christmas.
Right.
Because it's a time when you already feel like a little bit outsidery and different. Like it's a very pretty holiday and most people celebrate it, but some who do not feel even more disconnected from people.
Segregated.
Yeah. At that time of year. And then when like you're probably off work, you're probably kind of have a forced vacation, you know?
Right.
So you have a couple of days off probably. And then if you don't necessarily have people to do stuff with, it can get kind of, you know, it can
or
be a
you're
bummer.
Working because nobody else is. So or you're that. Like, fine, I'll work.
Yeah. Well,
it's
there's
not your
a phenomenon.
Can you work?
There's a phenomenon that I know I have enjoyed year after year, and it is called Jews Do the News.
Right.
And that is this time of year where me and my Jewish brethren sit
yes.
around and we host things. It's fun.
Yeah. There was a lot of that. I've noticed. yeah. in the past.
Oh, I'm still at it.
Yeah.
There's still more for my shifts to go.
Yeah. So we've been talking about a lot of different holiday stuff and seasonal depression, of course. Let's move forward into something more positive, which is the resolutions and the making of new habits as we go forward. Because when I have done this in the past, and my big joke is that my New Year's resolution is that I want to floss, because really it's just a healthy habit and I should really do it more. But it's also something that's very attainable, but that's a habit I want to form.
Right.
It's not the end goal. And Yen was actually talking to me about a book he read. And Yen, what were you saying about goals can sometimes be damaging?
So the problem with goals, according to this book, it's called 4 Seconds by this author, Peter Bregman. Great book. So essentially what goals do is they make you get tunnel vision. They did this study back in the day with quarterbacks, and these quarterbacks were throwing a lot of interceptions, we're told, to stop throwing interceptions. So the quarterbacks listened and they stopped throwing interceptions. But then people realized that the quarterback stopped throwing interceptions because they stopped throwing passes, period.
So you just avoided the conflict.
You avoided the conflict. You solved another problem, but you created one in return. And of course, there's the study about, and I forgot the car, might have been the Pinto, where they decided, the auto company said, you have to build this car in 4 months. Everybody got together and they decided, let's do it. They built the car in 4 months.
Yay, done.
they put all their energy into it. And it was finished, but the problem was they had the gas tank behind the bumper, so when a car behind them just slightly tapped it, the vehicle would explode. So they met their goal, but they created so many problems in meeting their goal they had plenty of negative side effects that came with it. And so that's why, I try not to set goals. I sort of just set, an overall objective and then find my way there. Instead of focusing on the outcome, I'd rather focus on the purpose.
All right. I've been doing this Couch to 5K program, which has been very interesting and was recommended to me by somebody who was like, no, seriously, I was in the same boat. I'm not a runner, but I decided to do it and it was really helpful. What I have liked about it is the fact that it was, it wasn't so structured. It wasn't like you have to work out every day, you have to do this, where you would then I don't know about you, but I would feel bad if I missed it. This time, my son had pneumonia. I couldn't get to the gym during that week. And it was still like, happy to see me when I got there. The app was like, no, you're good. You're still running. Yay, you. So for me, it has been good. And I've been able to post my progress and have people online be really supportive. And that has also helped. So really, it was me kind of going, okay, I think this is something I want to try. And then finding the way that was best for me to do it.
Right. Right. And that's great. I mean, and good for you for utilizing kind of an online community that you kind of probably just pulled together on your own to support you.
Right.
So you,
I was kind of surprised. I posted it and then people were like, yeah, you, let's run a 5K. And I was like, whoa, I didn't know you guys were all there. All right. Thank you.
Right.
Awesome.
Right.
Maybe. Don't pressure me into a 5K right yet. I just am doing this just to see.
And oftentimes what happens with some of those behavioral goals, especially if you don't have a bunch of people like kind of supporting you on it, is they wane over time. We were kind of joking around about that earlier. So even if you don't go the way of some of the stories you were talking about, Yun, where you achieve the goal, but it's not really the goal you wanted to achieve in the first place, oftentimes we don't achieve the goals and then we feel disappointed, right? I didn't get where I wanted to go.
All right. So people say, I want to lose weight. That's probably the number one.
Right.
I want to be in shape. I want to be healthier. I want to be smaller or thinner or whatever. But exercise and losing weight and dieting are huge.
Right.
And quitting smoking.
Yeah.
All of that is really tough.
Yeah.
So when they don't, or when they break off or have a setback, how damaging is that? And how hard is it to recover?
It depends, but oftentimes I think it feels like falling off the wagon. I think it feels like, oh, great, I'm back at ground zero. And then, within a month or two, people kind of fall back into their old ways. And the statistics around that are depressing. I mean, typically not many people who sign up for a gym or decide to quit smoking on January 1st, because I think in part because they blindly set these goals without really a mindset going in about, what they want to feel differently. So oftentimes, like around this time of year, I ask my clients, so here's this kind of arbitrary end of year. What do you want what do you want to feel differently about next year? You know, how do you want it to feel? You know, like, let's say we're sitting here a year from now. How do you want to feel differently than you feel now? And how do we work backwards from that? And that might mean I want to lose weight. I want to run a marathon. I want to quit smoking. But if you focus just on behavior, mm-hmm. I think there's limited juice affiliated with that over the long run. But if you focus on how I want it to feel, you can sometimes get a foothold there.
All right. So if you want to feel healthier,
yeah,
then you can get there. But if you have a setback, it's okay. You're still getting there.
And no matter what method you take, the setback has to be okay, because setbacks are inevitable, right? They're going to happen.
Right.
So you have to say, like, okay, I had a day or two off and I'm going to get right back on. One thing that you have that I like is accountability. So I don't know if you set out for that. I don't know if you feel like it's accountability, but your Facebook followers are kind of holding you accountable day to day, because you probably on some level don't want to let them down. You want to be able to say, hey, I did today's run.
Well, I feel like somebody at some point, if I stop posting, is going to be like, what up with that? Like,
yeah.
You were running, but I haven't heard about it lately. What gives?
Right.
And, you know, if there's a reason, like, well, my son's been sick, that's a legit reason. Or I don't want to sit there and go, because I got lazy. That's why. I didn't enjoy it and I don't want to do it anymore. And so that, I guess you're right. I do have accountability. We sort of have to get to news. So we're going to take a quick break. Hannah Stanley, Dr. John Duffy, and Amy Guth. Amy Guth is here as well. We'll be back with them, and we're going to talk about power posing after the news, after this. Hannah Stanley, this is Girls Night Out. I am joined in studio by Dr. John Duffy. You know him as Psychologist to the Stars, specifically Steve Harvey. I almost said Dr. Steve Harvey, not yet. He'll get that title at some point, or he'll just call himself that. And it'll
Did
be
you
mistake.
See his Christmas social yes. media greeting where it said Happy Easter.
I love
He's him. In on the joke then. You know, that's all you need to do
that's
to defuse a bomb.
We're talking, yeah. It's just he owned it and like, okay, now I'm getting it. I'm owning this and now you
totally.
Can't make fun of me.
And the Happy Easter felt full circle to me. It felt like, okay, yeah. He's coming
now
all the way around.
No scene.
Yes.
Yeah, that was, we're done with this now.
And really, not to like bring up stuff you've already talked about, but I'm gonna.
Yeah, that's fine.
Anybody in our industry who has ever used a teleprompter, who has ever hosted an event, you know exactly how that happened. That could have been any of us.
It could have been anybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
But just on a way smaller scale.
Yeah, no. No one's asking me to host the Miss Universe pageant. No, no, no.
No.
Anyway,
no.
That's my two cents on that.
But to defend him a little bit, he's been asked back. Yay, Steve Harvey.
Yeah, so there.
So anyway, that's Amy Guth, who's talking, and she's on the your right as you look at your radio, and then John Duffy's on your left. So we've been talking about depressing topics, literally depressing topics, but how to kind of move forward through this. And now that we've gone through the seasonal stuff, now we're looking towards the future, and what is ahead of us is New Year's Eve and
right.
New Year's resolutions and things. And what a lot of people do is put a lot of pressure on themselves. And one of the things that I've seen recently, and Ms. Amy Guth is an expert on this, and you, because it's a psychological thing, power posing. It's something that there's a TED talk on this, and it was on CBS Sunday Morning. Amy Curry is the one who most kind of owns this topic. But what her point is if you strike a power pose where you know, Wonder Woman or Superman or whomever your Marvel person of choice might be, your brain actually changes. It actually sends out positive vibes and it makes you feel more powerful. This is awesome to me. I love this.
Oh, and psychologically, it makes absolutely perfect sense. On some scale, I can relate to it in a way I intervene sometimes in my office. If somebody kind of is mousy in their assertions and kind of like, you know, huddled close or leaning way back on the couch or, you know, like whispering quietly, I often tell them like, be big and tell me what it is that you want to say, you know, like own it completely. And if somebody just assumes that shift in posture, you can tell that they own what they're saying and they feel bigger and better about themselves. And they feel like they have a voice suddenly. And I think there are changes that take place in the brain rather immediately when people do things like this. And I imagine power posing even more so.
Yeah, it was her TED talk on power posing. And this has gone relatively viral, enough that you can Google it and she'll come up. And Guth, you've got some experience. Amy Guth. Sorry, Guth.
That's okay. Everyone calls you.
I know
that.
Everybody calls you Guth. You're actually in my phone as Guth. Because I was like, Amy, who?
Who?
But you do this with a project that you work with.
Yeah. So I'm a senior facilitator at the Op-Ed Project, and one of my many hats that I wear. And so it's a social enterprise organization that is working with people to talk the way they talk about their expertise and to help put big ideas out into the world. And so part of that we do, in one of the convenings of the year-long fellowship, we specifically do some power poses as we're doing like pitching exercises and encountering opposition.
So like role playing.
Yeah.
Type stuff.
Like pitching your idea, pitching your op-ed, pitching your idea to be on the radio, pitching your funding idea, whatever it is you want to pitch, to help people, and people note the difference. So we'll kind of do it once, get really tiny and try it, and then get really, really big and try it. And people will note the difference of how they felt a lot more confident with the second partner trying to pitch their idea after doing the power pose.
So
I do it. If I'm nervous about something, I don't do like Wonder Woman on like hands and hips. I will put my hands out in the air and take up as much space as I possibly can.
So you're kind of bigger than you really are.
Yes.
Because when I've been talking about this, I keep doing the hands on the hips. I guess it's the Wonder Woman pose, and I'm not a superhero type person.
See, so. I did that for, and then I like outgrew that one. I needed more.
Oh,
power.
You need a bigger,
like my
you
brain,
need more power.
My brain got used to that one. It was like, more power!
That's a passé power pose right. For those who like alliteration.
Right. That was my gateway drug, and then I needed a bigger one.
All right, so I need to go home and practice my power poses. This seems like, I don't understand why we don't all know this. This feels like it's such a thing, like we should be teaching our kids in school. First thing in the morning when they walk into second grade, they should be doing their power pose.
Actually, that's probably more true than not. I think this is the kind of thing that kind of like slips underneath the popular culture, but it can be incredibly powerful. I'm reminded of somebody who was a public speaker, a lawyer, and a public speaker is a part of her profession. And she, one time I asked her, she tried to tell me a little bit about what she wanted to talk about. And I asked her, you know, well, stand up and just tell me what it is you want to say. And the difference in her presentation from seated and trying to describe something to standing and kind of owning it, I could see her get lost in her message. And she was suddenly perfectly articulate. And all the anxiety and all the insecurity and the lack of confidence just fell away so readily. So, yeah, I think this is stuff we want to teach our kids.
This is very similar. It reminds me of Dress for Success, which was a big book decades ago now, mm-hmm. But where you kind of dressed for the job you wanted and it made you feel more empowered and it mentally put you into a position where people saw you differently because kind of you saw you differently physically. Now this is something where you're actually, again, I'm doing the Wonder Woman pose. And if you're watching at WGNradio.com, you're seeing me in about 3 seconds do the Wonder Woman pose.
But you know what I'm sitting here wondering, though, is, you know, when we feel shy or insecure or something, we do things like we cross our arms or we kind of lean out or something. I wonder how, if that's a cycle that we get into. We feel nervous, so we do bodily things that make us feel more nervous, that make us in turn more nervous, that then we do more physical cues. And I wonder about that if we, like you were talking about kindergartners, I wonder if we, I never hear, my parents never said anything to me about body language ever in my life or anything like that.
No, I mean, I do that with my daughter because she will go to a shy place. You've met her.
She's not a shy creature.
She's not a shy creature. But there are moments where she will be that girl and she kind of tucks behind the leg and, you know, just like casts her eyes downward. Sort of to your point, actress Allison Williams, who is listed in this article, which is in the New York Times, credits this research, Ms. Cuddy's research, this power posing, but reverse, where her character on the show Girls, is she has her shoulders forward and she's interesting, and it helps her get into character to be more meek and kind of be the nervous girl.
I can see it.
Yeah. And sure. So she actually embodies it in the reverse. And I'm hitting the microphone because
just put that anywhere. It's fine.
People have noticed that I talk with my hands and apparently the mic just got in the way. So that is power posing. So I encourage everyone to try the power posing as you go forward with making your resolutions and attaining them.
Because I mean, it can't hurt.
If you wake up in the morning and say, I am woman, hear me roar, or I am man, hear me roar, however you want to do that, whatever is appropriate for you, then maybe we'll get there faster.
Absolutely. And to Amy's point, it certainly can't hurt. And it's probably for most of us a departure from what we're normally doing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because I sometimes walk into the day like, oh, man, I got stuff to do.
Right.
Shoot. Let's just get the head down and trudge through this. Not anymore. Not anymore. Hannah Stanley, Dr. John Duffy, and Amy Guth sitting in, as I mentioned earlier, to the left and right of me. We will be back right after this. Hey, moments of gratitude coming up next. Very, very special for me. 312-981-7200. Get in on your moments of gratitude, and we will talk about them on the air right after this. Stanley, this is Girls Night Out, and it is Moments of Gratitude, the segment I always conclude the show with. And not only am I concluding the show, I'm concluding this show and the show. This is my last Girls Night Out. It is the last Girls Night Out. And Amy Guth, who is joining me in studio, is going to be taking over the 7 to 9 shift starting on January 9th because you're preempted next week.
Right.
Welcome to that, sister.
Welcome to this shift. With the preempted.
There's a lot of the preemption. It happens.
That's what I hear.
Yeah. So 312-981-7200. We go around the horn and talk about things that we are expressing gratitude or thankfulness or something from this past week. And obviously, this is a big one for many who celebrate Christmas because we have a lot to be thankful for. But Dr. John Duffy, you've been here before with me.
Yes.
If you want to start us off.
I would love to. I am grateful that my beautiful wife, Julie, is here with me tonight and that I get to share my life with her for more than half my life. And we have this beautiful son, George. And so family, all happy, all good. And we head into 2016 happy and healthy. Super grateful for that. But as an important note tonight, I am grateful for you, Hannah Stanley. I met you this year, and it has been enriching in my life, and I think you're awesome at what you do, and you're awesome host, and I always love being here with you.
Well, and I appreciate it because you have, I think, once said no when I've asked you to come in, and it was because you were out of town, and it was like 20 minutes before the show, and you were like, I'll call in. I'm like, it's fine. You can say no. It's okay. So I appreciate that. Thank you as well. Amy Guth, you are up next.
Well, that was such a beautiful moment of
gratitude.
Right? I don't even want to talk.
That's why I didn't go
talk
next.
Because... Yeah. That was so beautiful and lovely. Well, Hannah Stanley, I am very grateful for your friendship.
And likewise,
I'm thrilled to be your friend and thrilled to call you a friend. And yeah, that's what I'm grateful for.
Awesome. That was very thankful. I'm thankful for you. So thank you for that. Jan doesn't know this, but he's up. He has to go now too. No,
we're all looking at you.
Geez. Okay, things that I'm grateful. Well,
I pitched this segment to you. You knew this was coming.
You did. Okay. I guess the thing that I'm most grateful for is that I live in one of the best countries in the world, where I think we're allowed to have freedoms that a lot of other people aren't allowed to have. And so, just being able to be here and to express myself every day, and being around people who can openly share their ideas. Well, that's not something that everybody has the fortune to experience. So I'm very grateful for that.
All right. We've got a caller. I love it when you have a caller. Michael, you are on the phone. You're on WGN.
Hi, Hannah. It's Michael.
Hi,
yeah,
Michael.
I'm grateful for you. I really appreciate you've given me some really good opportunities, and you've been a very supportive person, and probably one of my greatest, I told you this privately, but I might as well say it publicly, that you're probably the nicest person I met in Chicago media over the past year. And you've been very helpful and took chances on me, and I'm very, very grateful.
All right. So Michael Guerin, who is on the phone with us right now and obviously on my payroll, Michael was an intern at WGN and did – their social media for like all of the summer. And I have to tell you, to be in the category of people that you consider at all a part of your life is an incredible compliment, because there are fine, fine people working over there. And one of the greatest things, and I call you my broadcasting little brother all the time, because I just see such a bright future for you, and any part I can play in that is something that I will be proud of for a very long time. But you had a compliment from Jeff Hoover, who is the producer of the morning show over there. And as soon as I saw it come out, I just wrote "frame this post" because yeah. because it was like the kindest thing I could have ever imagined. So, Michael, thank you for calling in and taking the time to do that. That was really nice of you.
Yeah, and best of luck. I'm going to miss hearing you on Saturday nights. But Amy Guth is lovely. So.
Yes, yes. Thank physically you. And as a human. Yes,
thank you.
Both,
yes.
both.
Yes, yeah.
All right. So people,
Anna.
Of course, thanks so much for your call, honey. People, you will enjoy Amy Guth, I promise you. But first, I will tell you my moments of gratitude, and I will do so without incredible emotion. One, she says, hopefully. One, my brand new niece, Isla, was born. And she's this precious, perfect little creature. And so I want to celebrate her as I did my first of my six nieces and nephews, because that's only fair. I don't want to be that aunt who's like, oh, yeah, you're number six. Wah, wah. So anyway, my thanks to my brother and his lovely wife, Anna, for having a gorgeous little baby named Isla, who I plan on spoiling ridiculously. I want to say hello and thank you to Jason Neary, who is my son's best friend and who often wondered if he would hear his name on the radio. And now he has, because that's what is cool. So, Jason, you're a good little guy. And thank you for you and your family being in our lives. I want to be thankful not only for Amy Guth and John Duffy, but for this show, because I've met the coolest people, and I've had the opportunity to interview really, really, really great, fun, interesting, compelling people and learn and hopefully help other people to learn, which is kind of the whole thing. To go very Oprah, it was a platform. It is a platform to be able, I've said this a million times in my brain. I think I've said it probably too much for some people's taste. But my grandfather worked at WGN, my dad worked at WGN, and now I do. And so to be able to say my name and these call letters every moment I walk in this building and I go, I can't believe this is really happening. This is so cool. This show was given to me out of the blue. Legitimately, Amy's heard the story. John's probably heard the story. But I was called one day and said, hey, we think that we want to do the show and we think you should do it. And I was like, okay. And that was 2.5 years ago. So my thanks to Todd Manley and Stephanie Menendez and Jimmy DeCastro, and I guess ultimately Steve Cochran, who was a part of those conversations as well, for working on that. And I am grateful to continue being here while this show is shifting in focus and they've put you in the very good, capable, kind, awesome hands of Amy Guth. I will still be here. I'm going to be here Monday and I'll be here on Tuesday filling in for Patty Vasquez. Ultimately my family for being supportive and my husband for taking care of the kids every Saturday night when I wasn't preempted by sports, because it really is a whole thing. It's not just like, sure, I'll come in. There's finagling, as there is in any job. So those are my moments of gratitude for this week. Amy Guth, we've got, let's say, 2.5 minutes, although really, yeah, whatever, if we're a little late for news, it happens. Tell us if you do, if you can, what we can expect in the new show.
Well, you know what? I think we're going to focus a bit more on kind of some long form conversation, look at really some big issues on the hearts and minds of Chicagoans and have those conversations that span a couple of hours. So it feels like when you're, you know, just sitting around the dining table after a good meal and you have these long conversations that kind of wander and meander, but they're really about X, you know, they're really about a big
holiday
issue.
Holiday depression.
Something that everyone's really thinking of. And so I'm interested to do that because, you know, on the Business Lunch show, I do really quick segments where I talk to people for just a minute or two, you know, sometimes as long as 8 minutes about a topic. But this will be a longer exploration of some big, big topics. And I'm looking forward to doing that.
Well, I have to tell you, one of the greatest things about working here are the people I get to work with. Amy is right at the top of the list.
Thank you.
Yes. And Patty and some of the female friendships I have formed at this station are really, really interesting because I was never that girl. And so I'm excited to have you remain here and doing this. And then also you have this incredible Kickstarter that finished and you did it. And now you're working on the documentary process of it, which is going to start very, very soon.
Yeah, less than 2 weeks from now, it will be officially underway. I mean, it's been in pre-production ever since halfway through the Kickstarter, but it'll be actually pointing cameras at people starting in less than 2 weeks, which is really exciting because then it gets really real. But I'm still looking at around Valentine's Day or so for the trailer to be out and then looking to have the first few episodes because it's going to be a documentary series. Hopefully the first few episodes will be out like May, June.
Yeah, talk about goal setting. No kidding. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, and then get you guys handed over to Nocturnal Journal. That'll be next on WGN.
It's time again to...
Hannah Stanley. WGN, this has been Girls Night Out. For the next 12 seconds, I am going to get you guys to the news. I want to thank my guest, Dr. John Duffy, his lovely wife, who's been joining him, sat in with us the whole show and then was incredibly quiet and didn't say a word. And then Amy Guth, who I happily pass this over to, pass the mic to. You will be on after 11 this evening. And then starting on January 9th, you will be here from 7 to 9. I want to thank the listeners. You guys have been incredibly supportive online and here, you know, texting in during the show. It has been a pleasure to get to know you. And you have not... heard the last of me. Weather management knows it or not. No, they do. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. The news is sponsored by the College of Illinois prepaid tuition program. It's 9 o'clock. Here's David Jennings.